What is the universe made of? It's kind of hard to find a more fundamental question than that. And Catherine Fries has devoted her life and her scientific career to finding the answer. Catherine Fries is a professor of physics at the University of Michigan, and her new book is called The Cosmic Cocktail, Three Parts Dark Matter. Welcome to Stateside.
Well, thank you for having me on the show.
Take us to that heart of that basic question, what is the universe made of? How do you attack that kind of a problem in a scientific way?
Well, the answer to the question, what is the universe made of, is very surprising. So let's start with the things that we do know in our daily experience, your body, the air, the walls. Let's even throw in the stars and planets. All of that is made of atoms. But all of that adds up to only 5% of the universe.
That's stunning.
So we're trying to figure out what is the rest.
And how do you do that? When I think of a biological question that I might have, you can dissect a cadaver, you can do tissue tests, you can do animal studies. How do you figure out what that 95% is?
Well, we do have ways of weighing the universe. So the very first way that it was discovered that there was something missing dates all the way back to the 1930s. There was a man named Fritz Zwicky, a Swiss astronomer, who looked at clusters of galaxies, hundreds of galaxies in there, and they were moving. Some were moving way too fast. So what he concluded was something was pulling on them. And he called that something dunkle Materie, which means in German, dark matter. So he realized that there's something gravitationally pulling on stuff, making it speed up. So since that time, this is an 80-year-old problem, and we still don't know what it's made of, but it is dark.
Well, what has your research found? You're searching for what is dark matter. What does your research lead you to think?
This problem has been around for 80 years, and we feel like we're on the verge of detecting it. So we think that the dark matter is made of some new kind of fundamental particle. Not neutrons, not protons, but something entirely new.
So nothing we studied in science class in school.
No, not yet. Hopefully in the next generation, because we're going to figure it out. So what my research has involved, oh, by the way, there's billions of particles, dark matter particles, going through your body every second. So this stuff is really pervasive.
And how do we know that?
Well, if it is the kind of particle that we think it is, we can do the calculations. I'm a theorist, and so I've done the math. How many of these things should there be in the universe? And I was involved in making proposals for, well, if you build a detector and you stick it deep underground to get rid of other competing signals, then these dark matter particles will hit your detector, scatter off, and you can measure the tiny recoil that your nucleus in your detector would have. So that's one thing that I did was propose that these ideas, did the theory, did the math, and then worldwide, tons of experiments looking for this stuff. And signals everywhere, but they can't all be right.
Yeah.
Are any of them right? So we're really excited. We're all jumping.
Well, in fact, it's funny. I noticed as I was reading articles about your book, about the cosmic cocktail, people would write, well, by the time you read this review, something else could have happened in this dark matter search. So it really is going at breakneck speed, isn't it?
You know, as I was writing the book, it felt like every month I had to change it and add something new. Some new experiment finding something new and potential discovery, but we're not sure yet.
All right. Take us out of the realm of the theoretical, if you will, and into the practical. So let's say you find the answer to the dark matter and dark energy questions, and you find out what is the universe made of. What does that mean in the everyday lives of people here on Earth?
I would give two answers to that question. The first one is that we are a curious species. We just plain want to know the answer to what is the universe made of. This is why humans have survived over the years, because we were curious enough to figure out how to make fire and all that kind of stuff. And this is the search, the exploration. That's who we are. And so I just have to work on this kind of problem. And I think the average person wants to know, wow, that people are surprised to hear that we only understand the 5%. Now, the second reason, and this is the reason that we're funded, is that there is always, always some kind of offshoot that comes, something serendipitous that you didn't expect, that turns out to alter our lives. So I don't know what that's going to be until we figure this out. But it's also possible that en route to discovery, some of the technology that is necessary to build the experiments, that could have massive implications. That's the way that technology has always emerged. It's not that you went out and looked for transistors. They were an accidental byproduct of Bell Labs technology. They weren't looking for a better way to make phones. They happened to find transistors.
So
I can't tell you what it's going to be, but there will be something.
I am talking with Katie Fries, who is a professor of physics at the University of Michigan, and her book is The Cosmic Cocktail, Three Parts Dark Matter, really about her quest to answer the question, what is the universe made of? And your book shares some pretty jolly happenings at conferences and the like, and I'm wondering how much cooperation and sharing really happens amongst you and your colleagues.
When I wrote the book, The Cosmic Cocktail, I had two goals. And one is to talk about the science, the hunt for dark matter. But then along the way, I wanted to communicate the experience of being a scientist and the fun that we have. It's not like I sit in my room, shut the door, and never talk to anybody. Quite the opposite. The way that ideas happen is that we get together. I get together with friends that I work with. Mm-hmm. And we sit around, we bat ideas around, we brainstorm. Then you do some kind of back-of-the-envelope calculation. You realize, well, that idea doesn't work, usually. But then every now and then something looks like, oh, this could be a good one. And then you pursue it and you keep going until usually it fails. But you keep going. And every now and then you had an idea that works. And it's very collaborative. It's very fun. And I wanted to communicate that in the book.
So it's been decades that you've been in this field. And I'm wondering, in 1984, as you had that freshly minted PhD, you had to have been an anomaly. You had to have been, here is this blonde woman who likes to go to Studio 54. We learned that in your book. And here you are in the ranks of these male physicists. How are you regarded?
Honestly, it was really tough. I was one of the very first women to get an undergraduate degree from Princeton in physics. I was the first woman hired onto the faculty at the University of Michigan. And you just always feel out of place. You walk into a cafeteria, and especially at these giant particle accelerators, and 100 heads would turn. And your first instinct is, I don't belong here. I want to run away. And you have to overcome that to keep going. And it doesn't mean that people are against you. Actually, some of them are, because they didn't want to have these newcomers in
these
the ranks.
Women folk.
Yeah, so some people didn't. But on the whole, people were perfectly welcoming. But it's hard to overcome that barrier that you have internally to not fitting in. So
30 years later, you've earned your stripes and you do fit in, yes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What about today's young women? So the students you're seeing today, what's the outlook for them and what's the reception for them? Has it gotten any better?
It has gotten better. It's still hard. I still see some of the same things. I see young girls who don't do well in freshman physics. And there's a lot of show-off behavior among the men because they're all insecure. Everybody's insecure. And the men know they're just showing off. And the women think, oh, I must be stupid, and they quit. So that's still ongoing. But, you know, things have really improved. I don't know what the numbers are now for PhDs in physics, but I think it's something like 12% women or even more. So that's a big improvement. And policies have changed. When I had my baby, I was told, well, I was at MIT, our institution cannot afford one semester maternity leave. And so I actually was bad. Mm. Now at Michigan, every junior faculty member gets a semester off, no questions asked. And the men are taking semesters off to take care of their newborns. Isn't that wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
world has changed.
And that's with women like you in the field kind of staking that ground.
Oh, I like to think so.
What about job prospects and career prospects for these students that you see coming into your classes? Let's talk about these undergrad students who might dare contemplate the idea of doing graduate work and getting a PhD in physics.
Oh, you know, there is no better major. If you're just simply being practical, you will get a job. You will get an interesting job where you're doing something creative. So I can totally recommend it as a major. So when I see these young ladies, I say, follow your passion. Oh, for heaven's sake. Whether you pursue a career in academics or not, you can go to Wall Street. They love you because you have quantitative skills. They translate to computer science or Oh, just everywhere. There's just a million things you can do. So if it's something you're passionate about, do it.
Katie Fries, University of Michigan physicist and soon to become director of NORDITA, a renowned theoretical physics institute in Stockholm. And her new book is The Cosmic Cocktail, Three Parts Dark Matter. Katie, thanks so much.
Well, thank you.